Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're going to be opening up the last frontier. Where are we blocked? What are our biggest blocks in life? I believe our biggest blocks are working with the beyond. How many of you can really have full access to what's going on out there, connecting with others who are already out there? And maybe even your former lifetimes. But mostly with our family. Wouldn't that be great? People who have moved on and friends who have moved on, to be able to connect with them. And how about even believing that they're out there? That's a frontier also. In this world, very few people believe that there is a life after life. And those of you who have listened to my show for a long time have heard a lot of interesting guests who are very experienced with the beyond. And we have a wonderful guest in the studio who is a beyond person. She's actually here now, and she lives in many dimensions because she works. She's interactive. It's amazing what she hears and sees and knows from the beyond. And it's a wonderful life to live that way. Julia Asante, isn't that right?
Asante.
Asante. We never talked about your last name.
No, we didn't.
Seen it in print. And you wrote the book, The Last Frontier, Exploring the Afterlife and Transforming Our Fear of Death. That's so important.
Yeah.
And you have so much experience. I love your book.
Thank you.
I just ate up every page.
Oh, I'm so
every
thrilled.
Word. It's so much fun to know somebody who has so much experience with the afterlife. And you've been gifted with the ability to interact with those who have moved on.
Well, it's my contention that we all have these gifts and we're all doing it. It's just a matter of becoming more conscious and directing the energy better. And all the workshops that I've been doing to get people to be their own mediums, I've had almost 100% success in getting people to do it. It doesn't take much. And when they do their own mediumship and they have direct interaction with immortals, that's a life-changing event.
Right. And it sounds great to those who believe in that or even are open and comfortable about it. It's a lot of people are uncomfortable about what is beyond this life.
And that's true.
You know, there's so much, let's call it, you know, religious dogma about it that puts people into all kinds of craziness and even has made this life unbearable because of our ignorance about what's out there.
It's ignorance coupled with the idea that in all cases, life in the flesh is superior to anything else. And so there's also the religious aspect, which includes also religions that that preach in reincarnation, because you get a bad life if you've done badly. It's still a punishment reward system. But from the secular end, you have the fear of death, the fear of losing the body. The body becomes all, and that is where we're most exploited in our society. Through medicine, the health and beauty industries, even news and entertainment, is mind-boggling, the exploitation of fear of the body's demise.
You know, I laugh when people look at punishment of death, and I say, oh, those people got off easy.
Yeah. Just think about it in the story of creation, the Adam and Eve story. Death is a punishment.
Okay.
You know, that's where we got punished. We got punished with death. It was removed from the natural cycle and understood as a punishment. And all through the Old Testament, even into the New Testament, you have lots and lots of ambiguity and confusion around death and around afterlife. For the most part, there is no afterlife until they came up with apocalypticism, in which you get resurrected again in the body. So there's no death. You just sleep a little bit until you're resurrected or extincted.
Uh-huh.
If you're, you know, the wrong type
and
of person.
And there's all this judgment.
Oh, yeah. And judgment has not helped in the last 2,000, 3,000 years. So I don't think it's going to do much of anything in the next couple hundred years either.
And then we get judged according to how well we obey the dogma.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all of it. Mostly it is about obedience.
Yeah.
That's what the creation story is about.
Right. And there are people who just tolerate religion because they feel it keeps society in order.
Yeah.
And so it's...
Yeah. In the book, I have a... I am a social historian of the ancient Near East. So I go back in cuneiform material in Mesopotamia to 2,000 years before the Bible was written.
Mm-hmm.
So I put all of these afterlife concepts together and shown how they've changed from an afterlife in which, especially in Mesopotamia, in which everyone gets to have an afterlife and everyone goes to the same place. And it was there wasn't even any concept of sin until the time around 7th century BC, where you start to get sin as a disobedience to a cult god, meaning Yahweh. And that's when the whole thing changes. So that's when they get rid of speaking to the dead, your ancestors, your family, your relatives is no more allowed. And if you're caught doing it, you get stoned to death. So all of the things that allowed people and were fostered by these earlier cultures of constant interaction with dead family and friends, they buried their family under the house floor, for instance. All of that was disbanded in Judaism, early Judaism, 7th century BC, 8th century BC Judaism. The reformed mourning cults were no longer allowed. You had the concept of sin formed around then, and that's what we're living with.
It's amazing how the church has commandeered this reality.
Yeah.
And now we're moving to a new age where all this is opening up, and we have people like you who are very familiar with the multidimensional phenomenon of our reality and have access to it and can teach others how to live with it. And once we know it, everything breaks open. And it's the NDEers who really have opened a lot for us. Can you talk about what their gift is for us?
Oh, I think for me, the near-death experience studies have proved that consciousness exists out of the body or outside of the body without the use of the body, and consciousness works better without a body. That, I think, is fairly clear. Especially when you read these accounts of the congenitally blind being able to see once they're out of the body using what I call protobiological sight. However, it doesn't mean that near-death experiences have the whole answer, because they don't. There is a certain borderline that they don't cross, and one wonders what's on the other side. You see this even with people who have died and are not coming back. There's a place where they won't go to. They won't go past a certain focus on physical reality. They know that if they start to focus in the non-physical, they're not coming back. So people who have communication with the deceased, who are not coming back, actually may be seeing a slightly different, they certainly are seeing a different version from what near-death experiences get to see when they're just out of body.
Yeah, they're getting an abbreviated look.
Yeah, they're getting a glimpse, and all of these things are highly influenced by a person's culture, a person's attitudes, a person's expectations. You know, we have lots of books in this country about Jesus being seen in a near-death experience, and that's not going to happen in another country.
Well, that's right. And I've had some shows recently with some astral travelers.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful to hear about that, because there actually are places you go based on your culture.
That's right. Or you reconstruct them based on your
exactly.
culture. That's what a lot
well,
of...
But they're available to be reconstructed
exactly.
easily. Right. All you need to do is want it.
That's right.
And then you can be with Jesus.
Right.
Or at least with somebody making believe
exactly.
Jesus.
Oh, I love you, Peter. That's just absolutely right. Absolutely right. Well, or they, you know, they just manipulate thought forms more deftly than we do. I mean, we're hardly anything more than a thought form. They're just more conscious of it. So they can reconstruct that childhood home or by the sea or whatever they want, and they know what they're doing. We don't.
Right. And it's very compassionate.
Yeah.
And it's done to move us forward into being truly in the light.
Yeah.
And so there's so much out there that helps us, and it's helped our families who have moved on. So many people come to me and want to know how their family members are doing and where they are, what's up. And generally, it's good news, although we do carry so much of our life with us that there is grief, too. I was working with, I had two family members who were killed in a car crash, and we were at the house mourning them, a mother and her teenage daughter, and they were there with us, and they were in grief.
Yeah.
They were so upset. They had just popped out of their bodies, and they really wanted to be with us, and they were striving so hard to be seen and heard, and and nobody could.
Right.
I fortunately could be with them.
Yeah.
And I helped some family members connect.
It's absolutely clear that people, especially when death is unexpected, that they need to contact us. But that does go away once they've adjusted.
Right.
Most of them are thrilled to be dead.
Well,
absolutely.
Well, yeah, but you can imagine a family broken in two, and how much they wanted to keep it whole.
Yeah.
And they did stay around for a couple months.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, until everyone's transited and everyone's adjusted. Yeah.
Well, somebody actually called me and asked me how they were doing a couple months later, and so I inquired. Within, and I was told that the mother was ready to move on, and the daughter wanted to wait another week. So the person who called me, who knew the community that they had lived in, said, "Do you know why they're waiting another week?" And the mother said she would wait with the daughter, and then they would move on together. He said, "Well, a week from today, her high school is having a big memorial for her."
That's too much. But even when they move on, they're still readily accessible. They are certainly more accessible soon after death. There's no question about that. And people who die in high energy, like active suicides, for instance, they can be spectacular communicators, word for word, just describing everything. And it does peter out a little bit, but they're there and they know where we are and they know what's going on because they see the whole stretch of our lives. The future is not a problem for them to look at.
That's hard to grasp for a lot of people, that our family knows what we're up to. My parents are gone, and I know that they're up to date with their grandchildren.
Yes. I saw my father at the birth of his first grandchild more than 20 years after his death, and he wept.
That's wonderful.
He wept.
Yep. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
It's so great to understand that about ourselves. And I want my kids to certainly believe that, you know, I'll be always there. And I think we're getting to a time in the world, in this world, that we're much more understandable but in society that it works this way.
Yeah.
That we can connect. Not only that, but you teach so many people how to be able to do it.
Yeah. It's undoubtedly one of the most healing things. It perhaps is the most healing thing you can do. You can have very deep reconciliations with problematic people, especially like parents, for instance, or a child who might have died or whatever. And these are powerful, powerful things. And life continues. The relationships continue. They become a living thing, which certainly has changed me enormously.
Yes, you've had that in your family.
Yeah. And so there's that end of it. But the power of its healing is that in perhaps a one after-death communication, people have cleared up post-traumatic stress disorder of standing for 4 decades or more of suicide longings, intrusive memories, nightmares, sweats, gone. Just when the pertinent person shows up. So the potential for healing with this, not just on our side, too. Those who have remorse on the other side are desperate to reconcile this stuff.
There's a part of your book called The Peel-Off.
Oh, right. You're the first person to ask about that.
Well, it was great. and that doesn't only have to be a particular person who comes in to do it. It can be just a helpful spirit.
Yeah.
So we need to be open.
Incarnation, somebody from another life.
Great. One of our previous lives come in.
It could be yourself from a previous life, or it could be a person in the afterlife from a previous life.
Right, who we were very close to.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
There's so much continuous love.
Yeah.
I did a session with a woman whose son had died. He was 8 years old when he died. And we sat there and, you know, we asked him to come and And so this little boy showed up, but he walked in, and what I was seeing was a Viking in his 20s. Big, strong Viking. And I said, "Andrew, that you?" He said, "Yes, it's me." I said, "Well, what is this? You were 8 years old, and now look at you." He said, "Well, I decided to come as one of my previous lifetimes to show my mom how big and strong I could be."
Mm-hmm. Well, all children and infants will appear in their early 20s.
Oh, really?
Even infants.
Okay.
If it's disturbing to the parent, that won't happen. But they will, even if they, I've never seen them be an infant, but maybe an infant will look like it's 5 or 6. A 5 or 6 year old usually looks like they're 20.
Okay.
And no matter what the age is, they have the reasoning and the ability to communicate of an adult. And this
yes.
also, by the way, occurs. Listeners, hold on to your seats and don't think I'm crazy, because I'm not. But even some animals also communicate telepathically with a rationality that's astounding. Not all, but some can.
Wisdom.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's amazing what comes through. I was shocked at that point, because I didn't know what you know about this age and that we can come in as older. And so I was going, I never heard of this before.
Yeah. But, and the older look younger. Oh, that's always.
Yeah. I saw
in
my
their prime,
mother.
You return to a maximum state.
Right.
And that's part of the message, that you are in a maximum state.
My mother visited me one time. And she had died at 71, and she didn't look so hot because she was ill. And when she visited me, she was in her 30s. But in her 30s, she needed her teeth fixed. They weren't fixed until she was probably in her 50s. And she showed up in her 30s with good teeth.
Yeah, right. Probably displaying them for you, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? No, it's marvelous. The elasticity is just marvelous. And, of course, these are projections of themselves. In a way, we are also just projections of ourselves, right?
Right. We're only points of light that we project as illusions.
Right.
So that we can communicate and know each other.
The human body, or any atom, has almost no matter in it whatsoever. It's about relationship between the space in an atom and the amount of matter in the atom is a football field to a small pea.
Right.
So if you got all of your space knocked out of your atoms, you'd be a little tiny microscopic dot. No. So that's the only thing that separates us. So yes, indeed, we are as much of a light show as the dead.
Right.
Yeah, just projections.
And we're in agreement that we are, and that's why it works.
That's right. We have the telepathy. We have the same bank of consciousness. I mean, it's amazing how there's the only thing that separates us, as I always say, is fear. That's it.
Yeah. And because we're afraid of not holding on to this density that we've created.
Right. Well, when people die, we put them in that place called the imagination. And that's where we think they are. You don't really take it seriously. And that's a real dismissal. And that is one of the things that I've worked the hardest for, is that the dead be acknowledged as they were for thousands of years before these Judaic reforms.
Yeah.
They were acknowledged and worked with and dreamed with and all of this kind of stuff. And I'm trying to bring that back. It's a much healthier way to live.
It's so important to know that it's not just talk, you know, as you say, it's not taken seriously.
Right.
I remember being at a funeral for someone, and the rabbi, it was a big, big funeral, maybe 1,000 people were in the auditorium, and the rabbi was saying, "And now this man is in the arms, being held in the arms of God forever at peace." And I was like, this is a man who would never want to stop moving around. He was so busy. And actually, I recognized him in the, you know, moving around in the auditorium, going from here to there, checking everybody out.
It's such a static idea to be or beholding God. That's all you do. I mean, what happened to human creativity? That's what goes on. Self-fulfillment goes on. And another model I don't like about afterlife versions, and really we shouldn't be calling it an afterlife anyhow, because
It's beyond what we know life. Let's call it a beyond what we know life.
Well, it's just non-physical realities, non-local realities. But is this idea of learning. That just makes me crazy. That is just some modern 20th, 21st century concept of learning, and afterlife looks a lot like therapy. You know, endless therapy and schoolroom kind of stuff, and you keep graduating. It's just absurd. And this would kill, again, a Viking.
Let's call it evolution. Let's call it that we are always desiring more. You know, we want more love. We want more excitement. We want to be busy. And out there, we do that too.
Right. But evolution or I would call it expansion, because evolution implies something that occurs on a timeline, a cause and effect thing.
Okay.
And you can't have that in a non-local reality.
Well, in your book, you talk about once you understand the essence of infinity and eternity, then time loses its meaning.
That
really hit home that, you know, I don't believe that the universe began.
Right, exactly. Oh, it's so great talking to you.
Thank you. It just is.
It is, right.
And it's just the illusion that it had to have a beginning.
Right.
And you know, what's at the edge of the universe? What's beyond the edge of the universe? There can't be an edge to the universe.
Right.
It's a dynamic. And for all we know, there's 100 billion universes, or infinite number of universes, actually. So
physicists are beginning to realize or think that even our sense of space and distance may be just a perception of ours, which it is, as is time.
Right.
It's the way we organize data.
All is one.
Right.
Past, present, and future are one.
Yeah.
And so we're all sitting around experiencing separateness, but there's a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our curiosity, it's our interest,
it should be fun.
But let's not be light about it, because there is so much suffering on so many levels, and we need to honor that, and we need to honor, you know, the pain that we choose. And we choose it for whatever reasons we choose it for. I believe we choose it for greater compassion, to understand compassion and to understand our caring.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's really not understanding what the life experiment is.
Okay.
It's taking it too seriously. It's trying too hard to make it all, you know, to have it all and all this kind of stuff. When you put people into an after-death state, you know, on their deathbeds or whatever, or even in past life therapy, which I also have done for years and years, anywhere where they can see the whole thing in perspective, and they look back on themselves and the dramas that they created, often they start to laugh.
Well, they weren't laughing when they were in the middle of it.
Exactly. But we are writing our own plays.
Yes. Oh, yes. We're choosing each life.
If we had the perspective of knowing what this was, this little tiny moment, itsy-bitsy moment in an infinity, we would enjoy it more, not try so hard.
Well, there's some...
And we would not overpopulate.
Some wisdom that comes from each lifetime that we want, and we choose out. And when we're out there, we're so aware of all of these higher gifts and love and wonder, and so we choose a life where we're limited, and we choose it for a reason, and only because I think when we're out there, we're mistaken about how tough it is. And we come here and we struggle a lot and we go, oh my God, I hate this. Why would I ever choose this? Well, you did.
It may be a very rare experience being embodied.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
It may be very, very rare.
Right. It's a hero's journey.
Yeah. But and I think we should enjoy some of our limitations.
To the compassion of it, to the richness of it. There's a richness in this life that it's not so easy to achieve out there.
Right. Get into the gravity, because you're not going to get it again.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But it sure can be painful.
Yeah.
And that's what we have trouble understanding, and that's where all the judgment comes in.
I think there's so much judgment around pain, too. We create so much more pain than we need to have.
Right.
Even physical. The way the West has dramatized birthing, for instance, you know, the screaming mother and the pain and the whole business, is so different from the way other cultures have presented birthing, that we've created more pain. We create much more pain in the dying process. than there needs to be. When people have reconciled and they've accepted death, or even, God forbid, they understood what was going to happen afterwards, there's almost no pain.
Right. It's our limited opinions that create the suffering.
Yeah, and the reverse placebo effect.
Uh-huh.
The nocebo, I think it's called. It's something that we expect. We get
right.
fed it from the media.
Right.
And so therefore...
And that's what feeds our opinions about it.
Yeah.
So it's something that we're moving beyond. We are moving into a new age of greater awareness. And you're one of the gifters of that new age. And so
as are you.
Thank you. And so your book is so important. It's called The Last Frontier. And it's available through New World Publishing. They're terrific. They have the best books.
They do. It's everywhere. I mean, it's on every online booksellers, it's in bookstores. And if people might want to look at my website, which is just www.juliaassante.com. And you can find out more about the book. And
right. And your last name is Assante.
That's right.
Right. And so it's wonderful. I'm sure a lot of people will want to follow up. And you're going to be coming back to New York a lot.
Yeah. I'm based here, mainly in the States.
Right. But in New York, your background is in this area.
Yeah.
And you'll be leading workshops and helping people learn how to connect with their families and friends who have gone.
From shore to shore, I will do workshops.
That's such a blessing. I really appreciate talking with you, and I loved your book. It was fascinating, the experiences you've had with the dead and how that opens up opportunities for people to see the way that we can connect and also the way the dead want to connect with us.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really important.
That really is, yeah.
You know, to know that they're seeking us as much as we're seeking them.
I've seen some of them 40, 50 years trying to get through to their children.
Yeah.
Trying to make contact, and the kids are just too angry to let them in. Or they're too used to their stories of their victimization or whatever it is, and they just won't let the forgiveness happen. It's so tragic.
It would be so wonderful. I know so many people whose parents could heal them a lot.
Yeah.
Afterwards, during life, they were only causing more trouble.
That's right.
But afterwards?
Afterwards, you become who you really are, your authentic self, without all the fears. It's an amazing thing. You're an immortal.
And they're contrite.
Yeah.
You know, they really feel for the pain they created.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to know about. So, Julia Assante, this is so much fun
talking with
you.
Yeah.
And I wish you so much luck with your book and just your journey here is so important in this age and this time. So I want to thank you for being on.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter.
Oh, sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. A lot of classes I'm doing, touching on a lot of the subject matter too. So please tune in, check them out, and keep listening. And thank you for listening to the show.